The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 U.S.-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out Pear.com today to learn more. P-A-I-R.com.
Welcome to Real Paranormal Activity, the network. Entertainment you'll enjoy.
You are listening to an RPA production, where people gather. Ladies and gentlemen, RPA is proud to present Aaron's Horror Show with Aaron Frail.
This is Jason Witter, author, illustrator of Tiny East Vampire and Monsters Eating Ice Cream, and you are listening to Aaron's Horror Show.
You are listening to Aaron's Horror Show, and I'm your host, Aaron Frail. We get to read fiction on the show and talk about some movies, books, you name it. If you like what I do here, please consider supporting the show at patreon.com/AaronFrail. You'll get some books and other cool stuff for your support. Go ahead and also reach out to me at aaronshorrorshow@gmail.com, Aaron Horror Show on Twitter, or Aaron's Horror Show on Facebook. Thank you so much for listening and enjoy.
Guests, I have Christine Daigle and JP Ryan Flesh, and they are both authors of serialized short fiction. And they also have a podcast that I'm going to be a guest on their podcast coming up here. So let's go ahead and welcome to the show, Christine and welcome.
Hello.
Thank you. Hello.
So you guys both have some stories that I have had the pleasure of checking out. So I've taken a look at some of both your stories, but I would rather have you introduce them to our audience here. I know this is Aaron's Horror Show, so this is perfect because both of you are actual horror authors. Usually I'm bringing on like sci-fi authors because that's all the people I know because I write a lot of sci-fi. So let's have them hear about your stories.
Yeah.
Start with Christine. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah. I actually do write sci-fi as well. So I do have a sci-fi serial, The Molecule Thief, but I'm not here to talk about that one today. I co-write with my co-writer, Stuart Sternberg, and we write under the name LP Styles. And we have a horror serial called Dark Is Away, which if you like things in the vein of Joe Hill or, you know, tension like Josh Malerman, or if you liked Hereditary, you probably will like that.
Cool. Great. Great. And JP, do you want to go ahead and introduce yours?
Yeah. So I have a short story that's out for free that anyone can grab if they want. It's called The Rules. And my co-author, A.B. Cohen, and I wrote it. It's a team together event to co-write this. And then we ended up writing a six-book story we are going to be publishing in a couple of months. So this is kind of like the first experience of us working together. And it is a horror involving a girl who has come overseas back in the early 1920s, and some hideous or insidious things ensue. Demons.
Yay, demons.
So I do have, yes, yay, demons. I do have a Kindle Vella coming out sometime in the near future with a co-writer, Jeff Elkins, who's the dialogue doctor, but we don't have a release date on that yet.
Cool. Great, great. So we'll start with Christine. So I went ahead and took a look at the stuff that you had up there on Kindle Vella. And it started off with this very interesting scene of a brother and his two younger sisters. And one of the sisters came up and immediately had kind of a premonition that, you know, their mom was dead and it was 3 a.m. And in order to prove that their mom is not dead, they call their mom. And I thought it was just really an interesting choice you made there, because one of the things that struck me was how she thought she was like the brother kind of mentioned that, you know, she was right. not right like with this particular one, or at least didn't want her to be right with this particular one, but how she had premonitions of the past. And so, you know, go ahead and talk about your choices with that. And, you know, where you came up with the idea or wherever you want to go with it. I'm really free form on this.
Where I came up with the idea. That's a good question. I mean, with the idea for the serial in general, both my co-author and I, of course, are classic horror fans, always wanted to do a New England horror, loved, you know, Stephen King and all the Eldritch horror stories growing up. So that's kind of where this idea came from. And then giving him a sister that's a little bit of a sensitive, has some premonitions where she's been right in the past about other things. It just adds some tension to it. So really, I'm a fan of horror where you don't see the monster, if that makes sense. Those are the ones that always I find the scariest, where there's something going on and there's some kind of tension, you know, something's not right. And there's a lot of foreshadowing that something's gonna come on, but you know, the characters are always in denial of the supernatural going on. That's kind of my favorite trope. And it's, you know, those ones that'll just go into the basement in the dark and no, it's fine. That's kind of my favorite horror. So the idea for that was kind of to set up, obviously some stuff is going on and his sister Emma has a premonition about it. So hoping that's really going to draw the reader in to find out if she's going to be right about that.
Yeah. So that's into the story of whether or not she's right about it. And it's interesting that you say that you like the slow moving horror, the one that sort of builds. I had a friend who called it like the creep, where it just moves at almost a glacial pace. And you know something really terrifying is going to happen, but you never quite know when or where or how, but there is something not right with the universe. And I get a good sense of that right there, even in that first, you know, episode that you have up. Would you say, like, because to me it kind of reminds me of like H.P. Lovecraft, and I know you mentioned the Eldritch horrors and stuff like that, so it seems like that's a really big influence in your... Yeah.
That definitely was an early interest and an early influence for me. Lovecraft, Ligotti. I know he's not New England, he's from Detroit, but those were definitely a huge interest for me when I was a bit younger. I actually used to work for a small press in Michigan that was an Eldritch horror press. So I had a lot of exposure to that, doing reading and doing some acquisitions for that. So yeah, I definitely had an early love for New England horror. I've never actually been to New England, so I use a lot of Google Earth, but definitely was always a dream to do something in that vein. And I do love that slow creep horror. I loved, you know, the book versions of The Exorcist definitely was an early influence. That is a slow creep. Even Josh Malerman's Bird Box has, you know, not if you've read the book and not seen the movie, because they're very different. It's a very slow creep horror with constant tension, and really wanted to just get that vibe into the serial.
Great, great. So I have to ask, because we do a whole lot of movie reviewing on this podcast, what's your favorite horror movie?
Oh my gosh, that is a really hard question.
Keeping a top five, if that's too
I mean, I do love The Exorcist. I know that that is a slow creep movie. You know what my favorite horror movie is? And this is a definitive answer, is Let the Right One In. And the translated version, not the American version. I don't watch a lot of horror movies more than once. I have seen that one several times, and I just thought that that was a slow creep horror, and it was brilliantly done.
Very cool. Yeah, I'd have, you know, and this is probably betraying my love of sci-fi, but I have to say my favorite slow creep is Alien, the very first movie, Alien, you know, I mean, there's a place in my heart for Aliens where it's just a bunch of space marines shooting things. but you don't get the slow creep in that. Obviously, the first Alien movie had a lot of that. You know, you didn't even see the thing. So I have to ask you, are you an author who ultimately wants to show you the thing? Or are you a author that ultimately showing the thing is going to keep the thing? And even if you don't want to answer that because you don't want to spoil anything, but I'm curious if you have any strong opinions about that.
I do have opinions about that, and my favorite is not showing the thing. That is my favorite trope in horror, is not showing the thing. And even in horror where showing the thing is necessary, like in zombie or post-apoc fiction, my favorite parts are when they're not showing the thing. It's just the looking over in the shoulder, that slow creep at the back of the neck. That is by far my favorite horror trope.
Okay, so the imagination is more scary than anything we could possibly put on the page.
For me, it is. I definitely think so.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. You know, and for me, it depends on the story. You know, I have to look at each one of them individually to see if it worked that way or if it didn't work that way.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's switch gears to JP really quick and talk about your story there. So I got this really cool sense of vibe that not all was right, even in the way that she was invited to the place where she's sitting there like, well, I got a place to go get a job. And she's like, no, you don't want to go here. You want to go to my house of horrors, you know? And I like that, actually, because, you know, you get a sense that not all is right, even as she gets off the boat, so to speak. So, you know, yeah, go ahead and tell me more about your ideas with this and whatnot.
So this story came off of an event called Authors on a Train in 2020. So about 15 authors traveled on a train from LA to Oakland, California. And then we stayed in one hotel. And this was in January of 2020, just for reference. And we stayed at this Airbnb, the Ellen Kenna House. And it was just this odd old mansion. And I looked up the history of it and found out that this was a school for girls. And there was just a lot of like strange vibes that a lot of the authors got when we were there. So when my author and I, when we were grouped up to work on a project together, we immediately were like, we switched from epic fantasy as like the topic we wanted to do to switching to horror almost immediately. Cause we were like, something in this house is just, we have to tell something weird about this house. And so we just picked up on this creepy occult vibe. And I'm like a huge fan of the occult. I'm a big nerd. I love collecting weird old grimoires because that's who I am. And my co-writer is practicing Jew, and he's very devout in his religion. So we were able to kind of play pieces of our beliefs and kind of like opposing ends in one sense, but mesh them in a fun and unique way. So even though, you know, demons may not necessarily be part of the Jewish tradition, it's still fun to kind of play around with some of that evil spirit.
Well, yeah. I mean, you get a good sense of the fact that there's a lot of history, you know. I mean one, you are choosing to put it in a historical time period, but you get a sense that there is more than just what is going on, you know, because there's a deep sense of history with this place, you know, and it goes way back even beyond the place itself to something, you know, I don't know. I you know, if we're, you know, going back to what my, you know, a friend of mine who, you know, he was a big, much bigger horror snob than me. So he had terms for everything, but he called this the, there's something hidden in Berksby underneath kind of trope, you know? And so is that kind of the vibe that, that you're going for? Like this is ancient evil and.
Yeah, definitely. That sort of, that moving force that is almost inevitable regardless of what happens. But the part I like about it the most is this, there's a twist on belief that I really love when it comes to like demons and strange occult. And you see this a lot in like the movies, The Skeleton Key. And I want to even say in A Dark Song, you sort of see that.
So the idea that belief is partially responsible for partially responsible for losing the armor, so to speak, that you have against exactly. that force, right?
Yep.
Great. So I also have to ask you, what is your favorite horror movie or maybe list of movies?
So I love Alien. I love all of the, some of those, you know, key classics, but I am loving Hereditary and Midsommar. And I think his name is Ari
Aster.
Yep.
He's amazing. Yeah,
I'm loving the stuff he's coming out with more recently that just, it is a slower burn, but it just, it gives such a good punch at the end and I'm loving it. So I would say those two for sure. And I'm hopeful that, you know, The Witch as well. I'm just hopeful that there's more to come.
Yeah, no, that's Midsommar. That's some really dark stuff there, you know, especially the backdrop of it being not like it doesn't look as dark. You know, that's definitely, you know, one of those things where there's something, you know, something lurking underneath.
That was that was the fun part about it, because most horror, especially in, you know, that specific story is usually done in the dark, but they couldn't because it's Midsommar and you're near the Scandinavian Northlands. And so it's going to be sunlight all the time. And so I loved that dichotomy of bright, fun, floral colors and just such sinister darkness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Having an incredibly bright, bright setting for such darkness. And I think that's, it's interesting because I think, you know, and this might be something for both of you, you know, in both written horror and movie form, you know, you have a lot of tropes that have been explored a whole lot, right? You know, and sci-fi has its same things where people are sort of sick of one trope or another. So you have to think about new ways to reinvent, you know, the tropes and the stuff that has been played. So either in your own or, you know, other work that you've seen, what do you, you know, once again, I'm opening the question to any form of books or movies, like what's something that you've seen that's take something tired and, or tried and true and flipped it around to make it something more interesting?
I would have to say that the Fear Street trilogy that just came out.
Okay. I haven't seen this one yet.
Yeah, I feel like that did something fantastic. It put three books. First one was 1994. Second one was in the 70s. I'm sorry, I forgot the date. And then 1666. But they all tied together in such a beautiful way. And they all hit different tropes. You had the 90s slasher films, the 70s kind of like Chainsaw Massacre-like style. And then the 1660s that reminisced of The Witch and other sort of like old Salem time film. So they were able to hit all of those horror tropes, but still they fit a story that still had a really fantastic twist and turn. And even the two main characters, as you would put them, they aren't your standard characters. They actually press forward with this sort of LGBTQ statement, and they really come through on it in a fantastic way at the end that you kind of don't see a lot. You kind of see that, you know, those characters end up dying off or they aren't as important, or they're the total evil bad ones. And not to ruin anything, but I really liked how they at least did that representation, and they did it.
Yeah,
good.
No, I have to agree with that. You know, my gripe with Star Trek, I'm a huge Star Trek fan and I always love it. But my gripe with Star Trek was that you didn't really get any LGBTQ characters until Discovery more recently, you know? And I felt that was like, you know, a little late to the game when, you know, Next Generation, for example, had some perfect opportunities to explore that stuff, you know? And I think, you know, when it comes to science fiction, the easiest way to show people they have no future is to not include them in it. So, you know, that's why I think representation really matters, especially when it comes to fiction. And so that sounds like Fear Street really, that's pretty cool to hear that they did that. Christine, do you have anything that you want to talk about like anything we just talked about?
Sure, really? But I do think it's funny when you talk about Star Trek in book form. If you haven't read Cameron Hurley, I definitely recommend, because she just took a space opera and took the men out of it. There are absolutely no men in her book.
Okay, it's on my list now. I'm putting this on my list.
I'm blanking on the name of it because she has several, but it's The Stars Are Legion. The Stars, and there are no men in that book. And I just loved it and just cracked me up. It was so funny.
That sounds hilarious. I'm gonna have to definitely see this, because
yeah, and there, you know, it deals with like pregnancy and all of that, so it was a really interesting read. In terms of like horror tropes, I mean, there's always something that's the first and you're like, that's really cool. I mean, Girl with All the Gifts doing it from the zombie perspective was cool. Bird Box, when it's just like, you're not gonna see, that was cool. So I always think if you can try and take one aspect and just push it and innovate it, I think B-horror is great for that. Like, B-horror takes tropes and just flips them on their head and makes them hilarious. I'm trying to think, the only ones I'm thinking of right now were coming out a long time ago with like Fido, when all the zombies were pets, and, you know, Bubba Hotep.
Yeah, yeah.
And things like that. So I do love it when they take tropes and make them humorous.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. No, I'm especially, that's my jam right there. You just, for people that have been hearing this podcast for a long time, you'll know that I often take things and twist them to make them humorous. I read a book called Christmas Elf Secret Agent, which was about an elf that waterboards for Santa, for lack of a better term. So I took the secret agent trope and turned it into a Christmas novel. But, you know, so I'm in love with that. But to kind of go back to something that you said about Girl with All the Gifts, I think that like the Girl with All the Gifts book, like one thing I really appreciate it about what it did is it totally changed the zombie narrative in such a cool way that that I haven't seen do anything quite like that. Like one, it changed it from a virus to a fungus, right? So I think that was interesting in itself, that they literally take the virus and turn it into a fungus. But then they also changed it to where, you know, you were seeing it from her point of view as a zombie for, you know, the first part of the book. So I thought that very first part was really well done. So, you know, I think that it's a really good example of, you know, we've all seen a zombie movie, we all know how they work, but then somebody goes in and you know, takes a blender to that and then produces a cool work of art.
Yeah, 100% agree.
Cool. So yeah, no, this is, yeah, yeah, this is good discussion here. So let's go ahead and now get into your, you know, like what made you, Christine? So, you know, You like the slow creep. Like, let's hear the story, like, of what made you use. So how do you get into writing? You know, any sort of story you want to tell.
How did I get into writing? Well, that's an interesting story, because I was like a career academic. I did a whole lot of college, and then was in the middle of my doctorate degree and decided that I was going to have a kid while I was doing that. So I was at home with a 3-month-old and putting off my dissertation, and was bored out of my mind because there's only so much laundry and daytime TV you can watch, and decided that I was going to write. Why I decided to write dark stuff, That's a good question. That probably has some childhood therapy we would have to get into there. But yeah, all of my fiction tends to be a little bit on the dark side.
Hey, that's okay. We like what we like. You know what I mean? Like some, you know. origin story. I like to think of it as a superhero origin story. We all have a different origin story, but
that's it too. And my mom is a nice person, and yeah. I remember the first time she read something that I wrote, and she said, "Whatever I did to you, I'm sorry."
It's funny because you know what you're talking about. The district, like my wife, also had a baby when she was in graduate school, getting her PhD, and she also had that same dissertation funk, you know, that,
yeah.
That, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's such a grind
with dissertation writing.
Yeah. I always tease that I quit 4 times, but never told anybody. So I eventually finished it.
You know, you refocused on something, you know, on something you probably enjoy doing more, I guess.
100%. Yeah.
Right. Great. So let's go switch to JP. What is your origin story?
Oh man. All right. So I always have taken courses with writing, even in college, but I ended up pursuing a degree in biochemistry, and I ended up doing, you know, basically a job 40-hour week. It wasn't until about 2015 when I was taking a course for supervisory skills, and they had us write down all the things that we didn't have time for. And on the top of my list was, I didn't have time to do any art and I didn't have time to write. And I really wanted to do both of those. And I was like, yeah, this is on the top of my list. Like, these are the things that I just don't have time for. And then they made us verbally say, instead of "I don't have time for," "I don't want to." So I had to say in front of the class, "I don't want to write and I don't want to do art." And that just lit a fire under me. And it made me so mad because I was like, that is not what I had in mind. That's not what I want to do. So I just started like absorbing as much as I could. And it wasn't until about 2019 from that point where I had just listened to podcasts over and over. And, you know, I had all the craft that I thought I had, that I went to an author event. And at that author event, like everything just kind of blew up exponentially. Since then I've had, some short stories published, but I've made, a lot of network community, with the Author Success Mastermind, which is run by Jay Thorne. And I'm just like, I've met my co-author. We have a ton of stuff coming. So it just feels like it wasn't until about 2019 that, you know, was that spark, that actual like progress made.
Wow. So, you know, I'm getting this kind of from both of you, because both of you are really good at building community, it looks like, and being within the author community. Because, you know, and this is interesting because I, you know, most authors, when you just sort of think of them, they're people that like to sit, you know, in a room by themselves and write, which is what gravitates them to writing, right? Like, let's interact with as few people as possible. You know, that gets us into writing. But you both have told me some really strong kind of community stories. And obviously, the reason why we're doing this podcast here is through writing communities, you know, the reason why we did this whole podcast exchange. So really, I like, what's your secret? Like how do you get past being an introvert? And maybe you're not an introvert at all. Maybe you're an extrovert in an introvert's field. but how do you do this? What's your secrets?
You know, I'm a complete introvert, in real life, and I get exhausted. So I'm one of those people that socializing just totally drains my battery and I'm completely exhausted, but I don't find that it's universal. If it's this kind of amorphous blob of socializing where I don't know what we're talking about and we're just talking about small talk or the weather, like I find that completely draining, but I never find talking about writing draining. I don't know why that is. If someone tells me they're a writer, then I am 100% more extroverted because I don't know, that's just what I'm interested in. And I want to know about them, about what they're writing. I really do enjoy author community, you know, authors helping other authors, because I really feel strongly that that makes us all more successful. So I'm really motivated to do that, but I am definitely an introvert. And even after author events, I have to do a battery recharge. Like after
so you have
a weekend,
to avoid authors.
If I do a conference or something on the weekend, I'm wiped out for a couple of days afterward, but I enjoy it. So to me, that's worthwhile.
I know how you feel in that context, in the sense that I feel the reason the only reason I know other authors and talk to other authors is because, you know, my wife has a rule with me that I could only talk about Amazon stats like once a day. You know what I mean? Like I'm always wanting to analyze Amazon stats and you know, or some thing equivalent, like highly nerdy, only other authors care about it. You know, and my wife is like, I don't even care about this stuff, but you know, I'll listen to you because you're my husband, right? So I feel that's the advantage of talking to other authors.
I would say that I'm similar to Christine. You know, I have a lot of introvert tendencies, but I'm probably a little closer to the extroverted. But even then, there is something about writing and something about art that I could just nerd out for hours on. And that's why, like, if you find your community, if you find your group of people, like, you can nerd out about all that all the time, and it doesn't really like drain you. For me, when I found the author group that I went to in 2019, I just happened to be lucky. It was a group of 15 people. It included Christine. It was Rock Apocalypse. We went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and we basically created this apocalyptic world together, and then we wrote short stories in it. And being such a small group of people, I think that that was what made me make all the connections so quickly with so many people in that group and find who I could stick around with and who I could hang out with. And I find that talking with other authors, networking with them, and being able to offer what you can at that time, because, you know, right now, yes, I have some short stories published. I don't have novels published yet. However, I have some knowledge when it comes to like scientific research and digging into those things that I can then offer that to other authors. And, you know, maybe in the future, they may offer something back in return, or, you know, maybe there's a service in return that they want to then notify me for. But it's making these connections so that you can have that conversation with other authors so that you can lift each other up, because this isn't a fight between each other to get readers. Readers do not just read one author.
No, it's very true.
So thinking that there's some type of scarcity mindset when it comes to like who your authors are and needing to pluck them away from other authors is absurd to me. It doesn't make any sense. And it makes more sense to make friends with authors that are within your genre or within your side genres or just in general, so that you guys can lift each other up and you can kind of like work together to figure out what is the best way to reach the audience that we are looking for.
I'm gonna say preach on, brother, to that one, because yeah, definitely true. I mean, it's not a competition, really. I mean, if people only, you know, if there is a law handed down that we could only read one book in our lifetime, which would make most people sad, then I guess it would be a competition, but it's not, you know, in the sense that there, you know, we all feed off each other. And you're absolutely right. It's really important to find people that are within your same area of expertise or your same area. Cause, you know, generally speaking, if, you know, I will say, if you, you know, read Christine's story and you end up really liking it, then you should immediately go get JB's story and read it, because they, you know, I'd say they both definitely fit in that way. So, you know, I really think it's good to share in that way. On a podcast, we, you know, could go on for 5 hours, but you know, who's really going to listen to a 5-hour podcast? Maybe I'll release one day that's hours of silence, and you know, see if that makes the advertisers happy. But you know, since we're running out of time, I want to give you some closing statement time. If there's something you were dying to tell people that we didn't cover, or at the very least, how to get your books, how to get a hold of you, what's your social media, what's your websites, can they join a mailing list to get free stuff? anything you want to say, this is your time. So Christine, we'll go ahead and start with you. Go ahead and let them know.
Sure. So yeah, my horror serial and my sci-fi serial with my co-writer is lpstylesbooks.com. So you can find them there. My own stuff is at christinedaglebooks.com. And JP and I do a podcast together that features Vella authors, and that's the serialfictionshow.com. And any of those websites, you can find my socials and come say hello.
Great.
Yeah, so same as Christine for serialfictionshow.com. Highly recommend. It's a fun little journey. I also do a separate podcast with author Chris Kane. It is the Right Away Podcast. Which rightawaypodcast.com will take you right there. And then my own website, I apologize, it is jprindfleischix.com. If you know how to spell Fleshman's Vodka, you know how to spell Rhine Flesh. So you can find me there. I'll be posting some of the coming soon for the series that I'm working on. And you can also find socials there. So go ahead and check that out.
Cool. Awesome. And I want to go ahead and close and say, not only check out the writing, but also check out their podcast too. I know you like podcasts because you're listening to one right now, right? You're hearing this podcast. And so they also have a podcast. I'm going to be on their podcast. It's not just me though. So check it out because you'll get to hear some cool stuff. And if they don't mind, I'm going to say they have a brilliant format for their podcast because they're going to do readings of the stuff. So you're going to actually hear a little bit of the work that the authors are writing. And then on top of that, you're going to hear interviews from these authors. And I think that format is really awesome. Makes me a little jealous that I didn't think of it. You know, hats off to both of you. So that's it sounds like it's going to be a very cool show. And yeah, thank you so much for being on Aaron's Horror Show today. It was great talking to both of you. And of course, the next time you have something that is coming out, especially since both of you are horror writers, please come and see me. We'll do another interview and we'll get to talk about whatever you're working on next.
Thanks so much, Aaron. I appreciate you having us on.
Yeah,
yes, thank you so much. Thanks.